Andy, welcome to the RT Rugby Podcast on the back of a pretty sobering weekend for Irish club rugby, with both Leinster and Ulster dumped out of the Heineken Cup at the hands of Saracens and Toulouse. Donal Lennon, Bernard Jackman and Wesley Liddy alongside me to pick over the ashes of a European season that ends without so much as an Irish club in the semi-final. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. Bernard, I'll start with you. I guess there's very few highlights or positives to point from the weekend. The fact of the matter is that Leinster and Ulster were both beaten by better teams. It's probably as plain and simple as that, is it?
Yeah, look, I think Leinster underperformed in certain areas, but they were well beaten. And, you know, you have to give credit to Saracens. The only thing you could say from a Leinster point of view, which positive, was there was a fight back and they showed good spirit. But, I mean, they'll have massive regrets around that first 40 minutes and elements of the second half as well. Look at a bit of their accuracy when they needed to be clinical, and they have been clinical all year. But fair play to the Stars as they came, did a job, showed incredible energy, skill and power. And, you know, Ulster just weren't at the race. I didn't even think Toulouse had to get into second gear. So difficult weekend for the Irish provinces, and a big setback, I think, not just for Irish provincial rugby, but I think it gives us a little bit of apprehension around what will happen to the Irish team when they come up against teams like France, England, South Africa, who are, you know, bigger men and more powerful.
But this is it. We'll come back into some of the detail in the Leinster match, in particular in that first half, Donal, in a few minutes' time. But I guess the overall picture is presented by what we saw at the weekend is, you know, what has Irish rugby learned over the last 2 years, where we've been running into bigger teams, being overpowered, out-muscled, out-taught? It seems very little on the basis of the two games from last weekend.
I think that's too general a statement. I mean, what Leinster have done and what Ireland have done are two totally different equations altogether. I think, look, on this podcast last week, I think we all felt that there was a possibility that Saracens can do exactly what they did. We knew they had the personnel on board, and so much of modern-day rugby is played out in the head. There's no question that Saracens were at a different planet in terms of their will and the desire, and I think that was reflected in the opening 20 minutes of the game. You know, the thing that surprised me was the fact that Leinster weren't prepared for it on the first hand, and secondly, by Ireland's own admission, that they were actually spooked by what happened. You know, it's a sign of a quality side that you react to what's unfolding in front of you. But in all truth, for the whole 40 minutes, the opening 40 minutes, Leinster, they just couldn't get their hands on the ball, couldn't impose their game. They allowed Saracens play the game at the tempo that they wanted. And that's something that Leinster weren't used to.
But that isn't that something that Ireland have fallen victim to over the last couple of years as well, not being able to think on their feet, not being able to react to a power game, not being able to change things up when things are going against them. I don't want to be generalised too much, but that seemed exactly what the trap that Leinster fell into at the weekend. They knew what was coming at them. They knew the power that Saracens had, and yet they played right into their hands.
Yeah, I do think, I think that Leinster have copied Ireland to a certain extent in terms of playing a percentage-based game. And the problem for Leinster is, against 80% of the teams they play, they are as powerful or more powerful. And the same for Ireland, you know, Ireland against Scotland, Ireland against Italy, Ireland against Australia, we don't struggle with that size of power game. Whereas, unfortunately, to win a Heineken Cup, or fortunately, because it's a very high level, you have to be able to go toe-to-toe with likes of Toulouse, Exeter, potentially, you know, we'll see how good they are. But they're definitely a more powerful team than the run-of-the-mill Pro 14 team, Claremont, Racing and Saracens. And, you know, even Saracens missing all the players that they were missing from last year's final, some who will come back, some are on loan, but some have departed. The quality they had in the starting 15, you know, they showed up Leinster massively. And it's a tough one to swallow. But I think they were deserved winners.
Wes, what was your impression of the first 40 minutes then? It was very frustrating to watch, you know, from an Irish rugby Leinster perspective, that first of all, they seemed intent on playing an awful lot of rugby in their own half and giving away penalty after penalty, which Saracens capitalised upon. What was your sense of that first 40 minutes of why things went wrong?
I think we were all certainly here when we spoke last week, but also across most of the media, at least in this country, I think we, in hindsight, definitely, we kind of underestimated Saracens. And, you know, I'd still stand by where we were coming from, that we thought maybe with the players Saracens have lost, Leinster would have more on the bench and the tempo they'd look to play at, that they'd catch them the last 20, and they nearly did. But I suppose just going back to what Bernard said about the quality in the team, and maybe you need a reminder sometimes, but there's probably 4 to 5 of that Saracens pack that are legitimate contenders to be the best in the world in their position. In Vincent Koch, Jamie George, Mako Vunipola, Billy, and Atoja. And for all the praise we've given Leinster's, you know, conveyor belt and depth, their opposite numbers just aren't as good as those players. And maybe we shouldn't be so surprised by the way it unfolded.
That's a fair point, Bernard. But equally as well, if you understand and recognise that, which I'm sure Stuart Lancaster did and Leon Cullen did and the players did, because they got beaten by this team this time last year, if you understand where their strengths are and you understand that you're not as good, perhaps, in five of the tight five in their position, and you don't do anything to change things up, then how can you expect a different result?
There has to be question marks asked around selection. And did they read too much into this talk around what a busy schedule it's going to be, and, you know, a semi-final next week and then a final and managing the squad, etc. Like, I just don't see how they picked Sean Cronin to start. It was a very left field call, particularly given the opposition, and that's nothing against Sean Cronin, but Ronan Keller is your best scrummaging hooker and Andrew Porter is still learning his trade as a tight end, so you need to help him against Mako Vunipola, Jamie George and Vincent Koch by giving him the front five around him with the best profile for scrummaging. And that, for me, that's Kelleher and either Fardy or Baird to accompany James Ryan. So you've two out of your front five who aren't as strongly suited to a scrum profile as they should be, and that's against the quality. The fact that Koch was doing a job on Healy, that Mako was doing a job on Porter in its own right, and not having that collective strength and size and power, I think backfired on him. I mean, to give up 7 penalties in a quarter final in Europe is it's nearly unheard of. I mean, it was a real long shot they're going to win the game, even if they were better in the high ball and the breakdown. I mean, that's enough of an Achilles heel to lose most knockout games. So I think selection-wise, big question marks around that. Maybe not bringing Gibson Park on earlier. You know, I thought if you need to chase the game, I know he had an error near the end where he threw the ball to touch, but he is a higher tempo nine. And I don't think he came on until around the 60th minute. I think that could have been made a little bit earlier. And the reality is that, you know, there was opportunities to rotate the squad in the Pro 14 and not really risk too much, but to have rotation for a quarter final against a team like Saracens, look, at hindsight's 20/20 vision, but it definitely backfired massively. And once you show weakness with a French referee at the scrum like Leinster did, you're not going to be able to turn that around. So the argument would be to start strong and finish with your rotation players or your impact players rather than the other way around.
Where do you put the fault for the Leinster scrum being dominated so completely as it was? I mean, obviously, Cox did a number on Cian Healy, you mentioned, and identified Andrew Porter, still very much growing into his role as a tight head, lest we forget. He started out as a loose head. And, you know, you think about the Leinster school system for where he would have come. There isn't a huge emphasis placed on scrummaging in the Leinster school system. I think it's half a metre or a metre there about at most. So it's not really a dynamic of the game, if you like, but props will learn their trade. Where do you think the Leinster scrum fell down?
Look, there's been a big shift in Leinster's mindset around the scrum. So the Leinster model was the Irish model under Greg Feek, and the scrum was a way of restarting the game. And they were more concerned around delivering high-quality ball off the back of the scrum to launch a strike play rather than hunting penalties. The Gallagher Premiership, the top 14, that's where your scrum is seen as a penalty-winning machine or a weapon. And the last option is to give the ball to the backs. Now, we don't have that model in Ireland, or haven't had that model in Ireland for the last 3 or 4 years. Now, we win penalties every now and again, but that isn't the objective as such. In fairness to Robin McBride, he has a different attitude towards the scrum, and Leinster wanted to use their scrum as a weapon. And when you have a more attacking mindset, it can often open you up to getting a hurt as well. And I think that's what's happened. And they seem to be all doing different things, not working as a unit and getting involved in individual battles. Whereas, you know, the footage we saw of Vincent Koch doing a great job on Keane Healy, I mean, that's the fact he has 8 people working together to focus on targeting that seam between Keane Healy and the hooker. And it was interesting, actually. I saw some overheads of the game, and the way Leinster setting up their scrum, their hooker is prioritising his left shoulder, right? Which, in theory, can push the weight across towards your tight head, which should help Andrew Porter. But I think the best thing to do is use your right shoulder more and bring the hooker down and keep the tight head out of it. But anyway, look, everyone has their own way of doing things. Effectively, there was too many weak joints in that front five. The back row were paranoid about Billy coming off the back. So as soon as any little bit of forward momentum came, they popped up. Suddenly it was 8 against 5. And I mean, it was clinical, it was ruthless. But I do think there's a shift in Leinster's mindset, and maybe everyone's on the same page yet, or maybe just not good enough against a pack of that quality to do damage anyway.
So with the pack dominating, and Bernard alluded to maybe the change that could or should have come at scrum half sooner than it did, given that Luke McGrath probably had one of his worst days in a blue jersey for a long, long time. And equally, there has been a focus on Jonathan Sexton about should he have played more of the game inside the Saracens half? Should he have kicked the ball more for tactical positional play to take the focus away from the scrum? And when it did go down, if the scrum was to continue going down, that it wouldn't have afforded the 3-point opportunities that Saracens were able to take.
I think what Bernard was saying, even like something very simple, like that, you know, the back row aren't keeping their heads down because they're paranoid about what Billy Vunipola may or may not do. I mean, you probably get away with that in a lot of run-of-the-mill games in the Pro 14. And it's just against this, the very best competition, you get caught. But I think you're right in what you were saying at the start that, you know, I mean, Irish rugby since Joe came in, and it's obviously very well set up across the provinces, but it's very much based on detail and best practice. And you know, that's the right option a lot of times. But it's very simple, I think, when the South Africans, the Frances, the England match you for detail and organisation, you're in trouble.
Well, this is it, Bernard. I what I'm struggling to understand from the Leinster match in particular over the weekend is that, like, we keep hearing about, you know, the talent of this Leinster team. They stroll through the Pro 14 unbeaten. They score an average of 25 points a game. They look fantastic. Everyone's playing great. The conveyor belt of younger players coming through. But the first sign of physical opposition that present a power game, and they're unable to adapt to it. They're unable to think their way around the pitch to problem solve during an 80-minute contest of a knockout rugby.
Yeah, it is worrying, to be honest. And I genuinely was excited to see how Leinster would approach that game, you know, given the fact that they've stewed on it for a long time since Newcastle last year, given the fact that they knew what Saracens would bring, and given the elements tactically and technically that they've improved on. But the reality is, you can't run away from it. You can't run away from the fight. And, you know, Leinster tried to get around the Saracens rush a little bit, and it got them in trouble for that penalty under the post. They just got stuck playing between the 15s because there was a line speed there and a physicality that's far greater than they're used to. So, like, you know, an average run-of-the-mill Pro 14 team can come to Dublin and say, oh, we're going to bring massive line speed. But they don't have the athleticism or the power or the decision-making to make it effective. So Leinster break through and then they score and cracks start to appear. Saracens are so comfortable in what they do and have been doing it for a long time. They trust each other. They play for each other. They make good decisions. And Leinster just couldn't find an area of weakness. And the question mark around Johnny Sexton, I mean, I think Johnny probably felt, and Leinster probably felt, if we kicked to them, they'd slow it down, they'd bring it to an edge. Wigglesworth will put a bomb back up. They'll get a breather, and we mightn't get the ball back on the aerial contest. And they definitely felt they could play high tempo, make them make a lot of tackles, and which they did. And the last 20 minutes, our superior fitness or less bulk or more match practice. Because don't forget, a lot of those guys hadn't had game time. Macko hadn't played, had played very hardly anything, but he lasted 70 minutes and was disappointed coming off. So credit to them, you know, they were able to get themselves, come here in really good physical condition, despite the evidence that maybe Leinster thought they might have. But also the key factor was they were protecting the lead. So it's so much easier staying in the game when you're ahead and you're winning little battles here and there. And I thought Itoje, I think Michael Rhodes got man of the match, but Itoje put in a performance that puts him head above anything else we've seen for recently in terms of second role play. And it's not the first time he's done it, but I mean, he was phenomenal.
Donal, I guess the overall point, you know, that we were just talking about there in terms of Irish rugby, the problems of Ireland have had and the problems that Leinster certainly had at the weekend is that when they come up against a power-based game, they don't seem to be able to think on their feet in order to solve the problems that they needed to win a match. And by that, I mean, you know, they seem content for whatever reason to stick with the game plan at the weekend until the second half, by which stage it was already too late. And I'm wondering why it is that with the skill set that we seem to have with Irish rugby players, particularly that Leinster have this conveyor belt of talent that we keep talking about and how they strolled through the Pro 14, why it is that they could not problem shoot against the Saracens team that literally rely on their power to win games and mostly, you know, the ability to kick the ball from penalties at result. Why is that Leinster were unable to solve the problems on the pitch at the weekend?
Look, I think firstly, it's a bit of a generalisation to say, look, all the Irish provinces have this issue. We have it when we play against England teams. It has happened at international levels in a number of games recently. But look, I think you've got to take that game in isolation on Saturday. I think we knew coming into the game that Saracens had real quality in their front five. It was no surprise to anyone that they were going to sprint out of the blocks at the start of the game. But if you look, Saracens had a very simple approach. They recognised, I think, from the early Pro 14 games that Leinster have issues at the moment with their lineout. They have issues with their lineout maul. They had issues in the backfield in terms of dealing with the aerial battle. So a very simplistic approach. It was based on territory. It was based on controlling the tempo of the game. And once they got a sniff, I mean, for the first scrum in the game, right from the kickoff, I felt they got a nudge on there. And, you know, as Bernard will tell you, when you're in the front five and you get a smell that you might have an edge in the scrum, well, that gives you a huge lift and something that they went on to capitalise on throughout the game. I mean, the difficulty I thought for Leinster is they're used to controlling possession. They're used to playing this multi-phase game. And when it was taken away from them, I mean, the bottom line is they had very little possession in that opening 20, 25 minutes. They were a bit like sort of rabbits in the headlights in that they couldn't control the way they normally do. They couldn't get their hands on the ball to almost, you know, to execute a change. And, you know, I think Luke McGrath was having a bad game at scrum half. So, I mean, there was a whole load of errors that came together. I think you also have to factor in that there's a number of younger players who, you know, are in that Leinster side, like Caelan Dorris, Ronan Kelleher came in the second, or Andrew Porter even. James Ryan had only played that game against Ulster. Will Connors making his debut in Europe. So, like, it's not a surprise that it took them a while to react to what happened in a way, but it's very difficult to affect change when you can't get your hands on the ball. I think Saracens had a game plan coming into it. And, you know, the likes of Itoje, Vunipola and Cork, they just excelled throughout. They just couldn't deal with Itoje. I mean, I agree with Bernard. I'm like, how he didn't get the man of the match was amazing to me. But that said, you know, it wasn't rocket science in the way that Saracens approached the game. I thought, again, all the talk about Farrell missing in advance. Wigglesworth took all the responsibility from a kicking perspective. Goode is a very good footballer. But because Leinster had no possession, they couldn't put him under any pressure. And as a consequence of that, Saracens, at a period of the game in that opening 20 minutes, when you had to make them feel, oh, how are we going to survive without all the players who've departed, they actually grew in confidence and got better and better. Whereas Leinster seemed to go into their shells. They hadn't been tested to that degree for a long, long time. And it's very
difficult.
But just
difficult on that, then. On that, Donald. Okay, so if Leinster start with a possession, right, and generally in rugby matches, you base your possession on the performance and the dominance of the pack. If the pack don't perform, you generally struggle to get possession. And, you know, it did seem like they just, Leinster ran into what they knew was coming, first of all. They were physically undercooked. And nothing that in the previous, say, 3 or 4 weeks, whether it was against Munster or Ulster, prepared them, it seemed, for what they were facing against Saracens at the weekend. And I just wonder, like, maybe are we in a bit of a bubble here with regards to Irish rugby and the Pro 14 at club level, where we think we are better than we are. As soon as the first big test comes along in terms of a big physical pack, in where be it from Saracens or be it from one of the French sides, and we crumble. Leinster crumbled at the weekend.
Yeah, look, there's no question that the Pro 14, and we've spoken about this, you know, on so many occasions. I mean, the standard isn't what you're going to meet once you get into the knockout phase in Europe. Like, we've seen that on numerous occasions in the past. I think the circumstances surrounding this game were completely different. You know, the lockdown scenario, the empty stadium, the fact that Saracens were in a position where they could focus on this and this alone for so long, and the emotional energy that we spoke about last week, that brought them to a different place. But yeah, I mean, I think, look, Bernard has been involved in management and in selecting teams, as I have over the years. There's always days, like, hindsight is a great enlightener. I mean, I think, you know, Leinster will look back and say, yeah, look, they did get some of their selections wrong. But, you know, it was almost a perfect storm. You could see it. I mean, it reminded me, you know, you go back to that 06 game against Munster in Lansdowne Road. Mallow Kelly fumbled the kickoff right from the start, and Leinster were on the back foot right from that moment. The same thing happened on this occasion. The surprising thing, as I say, is given the quality of players that they have, that they weren't able to address it. But I think Saracens knew exactly, in terms of controlling the possession, controlling what positions the game was played in, that Leinster were chasing shadows and they just didn't know what to do.
Do we need to move away from the way Irish rugby plays at the moment, Bernard? And again, I'm not trying to sweep in generalisation here. What I mean is, do we need to embrace aspects of the game of rugby union that take us away from being over-reliant on the power game when we come up against teams that have more power, bigger than us physically, than any team that we have, whether it be at Irish international level or a club level? Do we need to find a new way of playing this game that best uses the talents that we have at our disposal?
Well, no one's done it in any way successfully since, except Japan. And how successful, you know, is that going to be? Like, they're a very unique model in terms of playing this really high ball of play, unbelievable skill set, speed, and detail. I the problem is, at the moment, the way the game is set up is that if you, and it hasn't changed that much, you know, from 20 years ago or 50 years ago, if you have a very good pack who are very well drilled set piece, good kicking game, decent defence, and a goal kicker, you're going to be contenders. And more than that, look at the World Cup final, England, you know, England, South Africa, very similar teams in terms of how they set up, built around size, power, defence, kicking game, and set piece. And it was South Africa did to England what Saracens did to Leinster, the scrum, which was the key factor. So we just don't see it very often between high-level teams where you can get such dominance. Either we either get more powerful in Ireland or we find better athletes and bring them through, or we become way more skilled and creative. The problem is that all our teams can win 75% of their games by relying on power, because we are more powerful than most teams we play against. And that's not in the Pro 14, in the group stages of Europe as well, unless we run into a Saracens or Racing, you know, generally we're not too bad. So that's the issue, really, is that like, we could go in a different way, but we're going against, you know, where games are, how games are won at the moment.
Okay, so
yeah, I think, sorry, I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, you look at Ulster, to say this is, you know, Ireland against teams from England and France, you know, in terms of that power game. Ulster had Bath and Harlequins in their pool. They beat both of them away from home. There's only two or three sides that, you know, have that collective explosive power that create the type of problems that Leinster had last weekend. And they've come across those before, and they've been able to deal with them, albeit Saracens in the final last year, where they had similar issues. You know, it hasn't been an issue. I think you've got to have alternatives in terms of the way you scrummage and the way you use your line-out. In other words, that you're, you know, you use channel one ball, you get the ball away quickly from the scrum. You can vary your line-out in various ways to ask different questions. The issue for Leinster is, because the problems that they encountered on Saturday, they hadn't come across them for over 12 or 15 months. They just didn't react to it. Now, that is a function of coaching in a way, in that they should have expected that there was every possibility that it could happen. Like the one thing, every prop forward in life comes across a bad day where it happens, where he just can't adjust to the issues that are presented on the day. You go back to that, you know, people were talking about similarities at halftime between the 2011 Heineken Cup final when Leinster were behind against Northampton. The biggest issues they had in the opening half that day were in the scrum. Their scrum was under severe pressure that day as well. But I think Greg Fee came in at halftime. They spotted one or two things on the video. There was a little adjustment that Mike Ross made. And all of a sudden, they solved that particular issue. And as a consequence of that, they were able to go on and play a bit more. So, you know, there are technical aspects that created issues for Leinster on Saturday. And the disappointing thing is that they weren't able to fix them.
You can't underestimate how demoralizing it is for individuals and collectively when you are getting pumped, getting your head pushed up your ass in a scrum like happened at the weekend. And that affects your general play. You saw Andrew Porter knocking on a ball in midfield. It takes your energy out of your legs. Your mind is trying to find solutions. Like, we don't see it very often, but when it does happen, it demoralizes the whole team and affects everything else. It affects your backs. They start being trigger happy. The little ball they get, they want to do something with. And it has a ripple effect throughout the whole game.
Yeah, and Bernard, you know from experience, there's nothing more satisfying as a front five forward when you know you have the measure of the opposition in the scrum, when you're pleading with the number eight to hold it in so that you're going for the second drive. The psychological effect of that is huge. And I think it had a major impact on Leinster.
Do you think, Wes, that, you know, we're almost straight into the next season, really, the next couple of weeks? You know, we've got to finish off the Six Nations, but we're straight back into the Heineken Cup, I suppose. We've got a November International Test Series coming up, but we're going to have to go and play England. We're going to have to go and play Wales as part of our four-match pool series, and then, you know, whatever happens at the final round of games. Do you think that there's enough in Irish rugby at the moment that will allow us to put, say, last weekend down? It's just a bad weekend at the office. That, you know, collectively we're not quite as bad as was shown up at the weekend, and that, you know, if we can fix the few things that did go wrong, the scrum maybe, you know, the lack of possession and a couple of simple mistakes, that we're actually in a lot better place than last weekend displayed, or where do you think we're at?
I think in the short term there's very little option but to address it that way. I think in the long term, I think this is going to continue to happen sporadically against this kind of opposition without addressing it in a different, coming at it in a slightly different way. I think it's very hard to explain. I think, and the lads mightn't agree with me, but I think Irish rugby has been based on best practice from committee level right the way down through the national team, the provinces. It's been based on good decision-making and sensible decision-making, whether that be in terms of coaching appointments and strength and conditioning programs, player assessment, whatever. And obviously that's a very good thing. But I think there is a danger that you become a little data-driven in your approach. There is a danger that you become a little over-analytical in your approach. And I think good, sensible decision-making gets you 75% of the way there, or 95% of the way there. But I think when you talk about beating the Saracens of this world in a Heineken Cup semi-final, or breaking that World Cup glass ceiling, I think it's then maybe sometimes you need to deviate from the script at times, not just in terms of a game plan, a specific game, but having a kind of overarching strategic plan that gives you that extra 5% at times. And I don't think it's sacrilege to say, well, hold on, everything isn't rosy. Of course, there's things that can be improved on, and you know, different type of athletes targeted, different skills prioritized at different times. So I do think there's things to be learned from it. Do I think they'll be heeded? Probably not, because I think there's an insularity about decision-making in Irish rugby at times. And being honest, we're probably quite happy to get there 75% of the time. And maybe for all the flack Sarries have gotten, and rightly so, with the salary cap and everything else, and obviously they've been a team full of superstars at times, but there was a lot of very basic things in Sarries approach that are to be admired. Any team can build that camaraderie. Any team can theoretically bring that work ethic, can execute those very simple tactics. So what Sarries are above all else that maybe we could learn from is, I think mentally they're a little bit harder on themselves. And I think if we're to go on and challenge, particularly at international level, at the highest level, I think maybe there are some harder questions to be asked about how we get there, because everything we've done, as good as it's been, 95% of the time, at the crucial moments, it hasn't been enough.
Okay, so that's really interesting, Donald. I mean, is that a mindset issue in Irish rugby then that can absolutely be addressed? It can absolutely be addressed. And I take your point, previous point, that, you know, when it comes to, you know, being able to deal with power, a lot of the times we are well conditioned enough, we are fit enough, we are strong enough to be able to absorb on our good days whatever England or South Africa or whoever throw at us. I absolutely accept that. Is it, as Wes suggests here, is it a shift in mindset perhaps among the players and the coaches to be able to get the pitch that's needed to win those crucial games more often than not?
Yeah, look, I think it's a very fair point. I mean, you go back to mindset and you go back to what Wes just said about how we're process driven in Ireland. Look, we did brilliantly well under Joe Schmidt, but that was a lot of the way we played was so choreographed and so process driven that players were almost, they were afraid to deviate from the norm. And I think, you know, when that expressed itself with Ireland at that time, we were thrilled with ourselves because incredibly we'd come off games and we might only concede 4 penalties a game, which is incredible. But I felt that there were times there's, you know, during that period, even when we were successful, players were so afraid of giving away a penalty that even when there was a kind of a 60-40 ball available to have a go for, we'd never go for it. Mm-hmm. It took that kind of that hard, nasty edge out of us as well. In that, you know, if you saw a fella on the side of a rock and his ribs were a bit exposed when you should be smashing them, which a lot of the, certainly the French and the English would do, we were, no, I'm not going to give away the penalty. I'm going to hold my head. And, you know, there's sometimes when you just wish that we had, you know, that we deviate from that a little bit more. You go back to the question that Wes raised about Saracens, and I think he's 100% right. You know, They've copped a huge amount of flak, which they deserve to do. They broke the rules in terms of the salary cap in the Gallagher Premiership. But they weren't spending a huge amount more than a lot of the French clubs were, and their budgets, in some cases, weren't as big as a lot of the French clubs who were competing in Europe. So therefore, there is no salary cap in Europe, so that shouldn't be an issue. But what they showed was a resilience and a collective will. Bernard spoke about it last week, about their whole focus is about making memories. You could sense a unity of purpose within that Saracens group that lifted players to a different level, that when the Leinster players and indeed Irish players, say in the World Cup, are in certain stages during the World Cup, they weren't able to go to those places. They were used to things unfolding the way they had trained, the way they had prepared. They were used to running into certain areas of the field, preparing for the next phase or maybe 2 or 3 phase later. But sometimes you have to react to what's happening in front of us. Sometimes you got to go back and you know, listen, the mental side of it plays so much in sport that there's no doubt that Saracens were fighting for a far bigger cause than just beating Leinster last weekend. And sometimes that proves insurmountable.
I think we're after really kind of hitting on something really important here, Bernard. I mean, this mentality in Irish rugby at the moment, like as Donal and Wes have just mentioned there, Saracens had that will to win. They're willing to do whatever it took last weekend to get the best out of that team and that squad to beat Leinster on their home patch. And the same cannot be said of Leinster for whatever reason. We've gone through some of the reasons there, and they're legitimate reasons. But there doesn't seem to be that hard edge in Irish rugby, whether it's at the national side, whether it's with Munster, Leinster. Yes, they look great when everything's going well in the Pro 14. They play lovely rugby and there's smiles all around and everything's fantastic. They don't seem to have that clinical hard edge to do what it takes to win when the chips are down and when it's on the line. Is that a fair comment or not?
Well, it is a fair comment. I think I thought Leinster had it, to be honest. I thought they built it and having, you know, qualified out of their group unbeaten and the record they went on. I thought they were just hadn't been tested yet to see it. And obviously the first chance they had to prove it this generation or since last year's final, they flopped. So yeah, the criticism or the question mark around them is there at the moment and until they answer it. And in fairness, and I totally agree with Donal, they came here with a cause. But even before the salary cap issue, they were always able to get themselves up for knockout rugby. You know, they've accumulated trophies, and despite being well paid and lauded and playing for the Lions and playing for England, when they come to Saracens, they turn up and they play for each other. So I think Mark McCall deserves massive credit for everything he's done with Saracens, but particularly for guiding them through this period. You know, it can't have been easy in those meetings on a Monday morning when all the outside criticism, the club, you know, our club being told to keep the current crop he has happy and have them turn up as well drilled as they were. Because emotion without, you know, a good game plan and good detail isn't gonna work either. So I think he deserves massive credit. And back on Wesley's one, I think we have to be worried about Ireland's chances to answer five questions with him one. To come back, Ireland's, because form-wise, we don't know, none of our nines are standing up. And are clearly number one. None of our sevens are clearly number one. If Tadhg Furlong's out, you know, is Tom O'Toole going to play at tight head? Can he do a job against the best teams? Who's James Ryan's partner? Maybe it'd be Henderson. He's finding his feet back. You know, who's going to be left wing? And who's going to be fullback? So there's lots of question marks around Ireland at the moment as well.
Yeah, there is. And sorry, just to go back to that point as well about Saracens. Like, And indeed Leinster. You know, I mentioned earlier on, you look, I think Leinster had five players, 23, 22, 24. The likes of Keelan Dorris, who, look, was an outstanding, and I thought was one of Leinster's best players last weekend. Will Connors, Hugo Keenan, Ronan Kelleher. When you're part of a group that's unbeaten for 15 or 16 months and who's winning 95% of your games, for the younger fellas, there's almost a kind of an entitlement feeling that every time you're going to go out, that you're going to win the game. And by and large, these players have been part, that's been part of their norm since they've come into the Leinster setup. But every now and then, you hit a wall, and as they found out, they found it like this is, we've never come across this before. I think, you know, it's a harsh lesson for Leinster last weekend. But in terms, like, to write Leinster off is absolute nonsense. They have such good quality younger players coming through. Those players will be better for the experience that they went through. You could see it in their faces and they came off the field. They were hit by a juggernaut. They didn't know how to react. But they'll realise that the further you go in Europe, you get to the last four, you're talking about a different level. Even if Leinster had got through, Racing would be a huge obstacle in a semi-final. And, you know, I think Exeter will come out the other side. Exeter have very similar qualities to Saracens in terms of physical power and in terms of being part of something, a huge movement in terms of what Exeter have done as a club over the last 10 or 15 years. So had they even snuck over the line, like they got it back to 5 points, had they snuck over the line against Saracens, I think they would have been equally pressurised to win both the semi-final and possibly the final if they got that far.
Hugh,
just on Mark McCall there, I think it's worth saying, I read something during the week last week that his whole legacy or achievements with Saracens had this massive black mark against it now on account of, you know, what's happened with salary caps and all that. Like, obviously his name will forever be linked to that, and it's a black mark against him personally, sure, but I don't think it's a black mark against his coaching. And I think he's a really good example of one of the criticisms leveled at him in Ulster was that maybe he was almost too much of a nice guy to deal with some of the issues that were going on there at the time. And lo and behold, he's not too much of a nice guy to deal with the massive egos and characters in that Saracens dressing room. So there's a prime example of a guy that had a very good skill set to begin with and took on an outside influence and made himself better because of it. And I suppose that's the point we're hitting at. I was looking at the Connacht and Munster A game there before we did the show from the weekend, like a guy we've spoken about a lot, Thomas DeHearn, for example, there. You know, I'd heard from people in Munster that he hadn't trained as well as they'd hoped after lockdown, and maybe that was why he hadn't featured at the start of the season. And he was quiet at times in that game the other day, but he had one or two moments where he did things that typically an Irish second row doesn't do in terms of his ability to pass out of contact, his speed, everything. And you wonder are the parameters he's been judged by at times, like, you know, how many rucks does he hit? How many tackles does he make, etc.? While they're all perfectly valid, maybe at times we have to be open enough to look at things through a different prism and recognise other skills more if we're to match some of these teams in the most trying of circumstances.
That's a very interesting point. And again, you know, it's the legacy of the Joe Schmidt era, Donald. Successful and all, as Joe Schmidt was at various different stages for Ireland and before that with Leinster, it was a hallmark of his coaching regime with province or with country that it was very much stats focused. It was very much a repetition of a game plan that was structured, that was very airtight, and that really didn't allow for any deviation or creativity outside of his blueprint. I'm fascinated to see what Andy Farrell is going to do that might be different to that. And do you think that we now need to offer something different at Irish level to really kind of put it up to what we're going to face in the coming November into the National Series, which is the power of England, potentially, obviously, Wales, and beyond that, where we get to the final, might come up against France or whatever it may be. I'm fascinated to see what Andy Farrell will do.
Yeah, look, we have to do something different. There's no doubt about that, because other teams have the measure of us now. I think at the end of the Joe Schmidt era, for all the fantastic things that he did, because it was so scripted, the opposition knew in advance of games exactly what was happening, with the exception maybe of a couple of different power plays off set piece or different attacking moves that they hadn't seen before. But in general terms, they knew how that Irish team played and they knew how to counter it. So therefore, you have to continue to evolve. And I think it's fair to say that we haven't. I mean, funny enough, I was coming out of the Aviva Stadium on Saturday and the first fella I bumped into was Andy Farrell. And we just looked at each other, smiled and said, Jesus, the scrum. And of course, I'd forgotten his son was playing in that World Cup final for England. And I said, yeah, look, we've seen it before, haven't we, Yokohama? And he was, yeah, but you could see, now, look, we only spoke for a minute or two, but there's no question in my mind that he is fully aware that Ireland have to move on and have to have a different approach. And to be fair to him, I think he had shown elements of that in the three games that Ireland played. The difficulty for him is, again, you're back to firefighting in that Ireland play six games in a row now, and he'll have very little time with them to impose what element of changes he had. I don't think that Irish squad have been together, obviously, with all the COVID issues since the game against Italy was cancelled. So that's seven or 8 months ago. So again, you can't expect him to press a button and change the whole Ireland's whole approach in maybe two or three training sessions before a game. So that's always the biggest challenge at international level. The only time really that you can affect real change is when you go away on that summer tour and you have your 4 or 5 weeks together and you have time to sort of put the building blocks in place for what's coming down the line. So like with Andy Farrell, it's been a case of a feast or a famine. He had no games whatsoever and no time to prepare. And now he lives six games in a 5 week period. So
I think, Donal, in fairness, all the ills of Irish rugby are well summed up when the president of one of the most illustrious clubs in the country doesn't bother to turn up for a Munster Senior Cup semi final because he's on commentary duty at the weekend. Would that be a fair point?
Fair to say, it was against. Yeah, it shouldn't be the Young Munster match you're talking about, Wes, by any chance.
Oh, but it could well be, but sure, look, absenteeism is absenteeism, I suppose, you know.
I have to look after the day job, Wes.
Yeah. Before we leave it for this weekend, I'm going to ask each of you to give me your most likely winner of the Champions Cup as we head for the semi-finals this weekend. We have Racing, obviously, you know, with Donegal Ryan and Simon Zebo. We have Saracens, who we know what they've just done to Leinster. Can they sustain that level of performance given the amount of players that are missing from last year? We have a very good Exeter Chiefs side, very well coached under Baxter, and as I say, seem well capable of going and beating a Toulouse side that have one of the biggest packs I've ever seen in club rugby. But can you find a way to tire them out and basically keep the ball away from Chess and Kobe? And Bernard, I'll ask you first, who do you think is most equipped to go and win the competition this year?
Yeah, I think it'll be a Racing Exeter final with Racing to win.
Okay, Donal?
I agree with that 100%. I think Saracens, you know, trying to lift themselves again. They had 7 months to prepare for Leinster. They have 7 days to prepare for Racing. The one plus, of course, they played them twice in the pool stage. But I think Racing will be bullying for that. I think Racing will win. Exeter will beat Toulouse in Exeter. And I think Racing, you know, having lost that final to Leinster so narrowly in Bilbao, just that little bit of an edge. Now, the only caveat on that is, where is the final going to be played? You know, probably in England, which could be a plus for Exeter. But then again, if there's nobody there, will it make that much difference? But I fancy Racing at this stage as well.
Wesley?
Very hard to call. Probably slightly veer towards Racing, and would absolutely love to see Donegal Ryan win a European Cup, and love to see Mike Prendergast involved there as well. So I'd definitely be shouting for them anyway.
Yeah, I would love to see that too. But I'm going to go against all three of you for what it's worth. I'm going to go for Toulouse to get past Exeter this weekend, and then a one-off game. But sure, look, anyway, it's all a moot point. There's no Irish side. It's going to be in the semi-final or the final. And we do have a November international to look forward to before the Six Nations comes to a conclusion. This year's Six Nations, albeit slightly delayed. And we have the certain format of a Pro 14 that has yet to really take shape. I don't know what guys that will be. My thanks to Bernard, to Don, and to Wesley for the company. Raphael produced today. And thank you for your company. We'll talk to you next week.